Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Horton Law School of Isabella, Missouri, an educational service in the public interest. I'm your host, George Lord. Now, the Law Hour is heard live daily, 7 days a week, on the World Wide Web, the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and the Gordon Law School, please go to my website. It's georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour brings you important information about law news, education, medicine, economics, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on brainwashing right after this message. We Americans are the most litigious people in the world, and we believe in our lawyers with a kind of religious fervor. And we're taught from early childhood that he who represents himself in court is a fool for a client. But what would you say if a plumber said that? What if a plumber said, he who fixes his own pipes is a fool for a client? Or what if a carpenter said that? He who fixes his own steps is a fool for a client. Now, doesn't our common sense tell us that a plumber or a carpenter who couldn't fix his own pipes or steps is incompetent? You know, my common sense tells me that a lawyer who couldn't represent himself has to be just as incompetent as that plumber or that carpenter. Well, listen to James Neilton. He's a professor at the Hastings Law School. Here's what he had to say about law school students, your future lawyers. He said, quote, "It is a fact that a student can graduate from this, the fourth largest law school in the United States, without ever having written a pleading, a contract, a will, a promissory note, or a deed. It's worse than that," he said. "Students graduate from this law school without ever having seen a real honest-to-God pleading, contract, will, promissory note, or a deed. And a student can graduate without having set foot in a courtroom, without ever having spoken to or on behalf of a person in need of advice or counsel. And a student can graduate without once being exposed to the operation of the rules of court." Now, whatever else may be said about this license issued by the state bar, let it be said that for these students and their clients, it is a cruel hoax. That's Professor James Neilton of the Hastings Law School. For more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, just call me at 417-273-4967. And be sure to ask for my free general law CD package while you're at it. The four-hour commentary on the Gordon Law School. And remember, it's entertaining, educational, it's informative, and best of all, it's free of charge. Courtroom strategy and procedure is available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, why don't you go to the website georgegordon.org. Click on the email. Send me an email request for your free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. Well, do you remember Mikhail Gorbachev? Gorbachev. You know, the fellow who gave us glasnost and perestroika, who gave us coexistence with the communist world? Well, Mikhail Gorbachev, in a speech to the Soviet Politburo in November of 1987, had this to say. He said, quote, "Gentlemen, comrades, do not be concerned about all you hear about glasnost and perestroika and democracy in the coming years. They are primarily for outward consumption. There will be no significant internal changes in the Soviet Union other than for cosmetic purposes. Our purpose is to disarm the Americans and let them fall asleep." Now, Bush's comrade, Gorbachev, admitted that communism would never go away if he could help it, and that perestroika was a mere cover for merging the United States and Russia under Leninist communist socialism. Well, President George W. Bush Sr. had something to say about this also. George Bush Sr. said that essentially, well, this is in 1992, he said, essentially, our military and other resources are being used by the CFR globalists as the spearhead of the New World Order. Not as global Pax Americana, as there is nothing American about it, but as an extension of the Soviet model of communist expansionism. This is to lay the foundations by force for a one-world government under a socialist United Nations administration that is core of the Bush doctrine, and it was his father's agenda. It is the agenda of all globalists at the top levels, and Bush Sr. admitted it in the following statements. Now, here's the statement, three of them. Listen to this. It says, he will give Gorbachev our assurance, or it says, we will give Gorbachev our assurance, that America welcomes this reform not as an adversary seeking advantage, but as a people offering support. I will assure him that there is no greater advocate of perestroika than the President of the United States. George W. Bush said that. It is the sacred principles enshrined in the United Nations Charter to which the American people will henceforth pledge their allegiance. President George Bush, addressing the General Assembly of the United Nations on February 1, 1992. There are the two key statements. Where does brainwashing come into this? Have the people of America been brainwashed? What is brainwashing anyway? I hear this term. Oftentimes people will say, well, the sheeple of America are going to be sheared. Or the people of America have been deceived. Have the people of America been deceived? And if they've been deceived, by who? You know, Gorbachev made this a public statement in 1987, and George W. Bush was addressing the General Assembly of the United Nations on February 1st, 1992. Now, the first paragraph, let me read this first paragraph again, which is the summation of what we have just heard from the two most powerful men in the world back in 1992 and 1987. I mean, these two men were the leaders of the East and the West. Essentially, our military and other resources are being used by the Council on Foreign Relations globalists as the spearhead of the New World Order, not as global Pax Americana, as there is nothing American about it, but as an extension of the Soviet model of communist expansionism. And this is to lay the foundations by force for a one-world government under a socialist United Nations administration. And that is core of the Bush doctrine. And it was his father's agenda. It is the agenda of all globalists at the top level. And Bush Sr. admitted it in the following statement. Those are pretty powerful statements. Now, special handling units. Let's talk about brainwashing, and let's see if the indice that we see being used over in Iraq today against those Iraqis that have been detained in prison and have now been discovered being abused, are they the subjects of brainwashing? How many forms does this brainwashing take? I remember back in the Korean War, there were 23 Americans who refused to be repatriated to the American side, and they stayed in North Korea, and they became propaganda tools for the North Koreans, and then later each one of them, one by one, decided to give up on communism and come back home. Their claim was that they had been brainwashed. Let's take a look. The Special Handling Unit, Behavior Modification Unit, different names but the same meanings. These are units that have been specifically designed and designated to control behavior. It is where human experimentation on prisoners is legal. The purpose of the control unit is to control revolutionary attitudes in the prison system and in society at large. So it's not just in jails or prisons, it's in society. We're going to brainwash society. According to former warden Ralph Aaron and federal judge James Foreman has stated, quote, in several instances, the control unit has been used to silence prison critics. It has been used to silence economic and philosophical dissidents. In 1952, at a meeting in Washington, D.C., between social scientists and prison wardens, Dr. Edward Sheen presented his ideas on brainwashing, addressing the topic of man against man brainwashing. He said, in order to produce marked changes of behavior and on attitude, it is necessary to weaken, undermine, or remove the supports of old patterns of behavior, and the old attitude. Behavior and attitudes which are provided by these with whom close emotional ties exist, it is often necessary to break those emotional ties. And this can be done either by removing the individual physically and preventing any communication with those whom he cares about, or by proving to him that those whom he respects are not worthy of it and indeed should be actively mistrusted. Dr. Sheen then provided the group with a list of specific examples. Number one, physical removal of prisoners from those they respect to positively break or seriously weaken close emotional ties. Two, segregation of all natural leaders. Three, use of cooperative prisoners as leaders. Four, prohibition of group activities not in tune with the brainwashing objective. Five, spying on prisoners and reporting back private material. 6. Tricking men into written statements which are then showed to others. 7. Exploitation of opportunists and informers. 8. Convincing prisoners that they can trust no one. 9. Treating those who are willing to collaborate in far more lenient ways than those who are not. 10. Punishing those who show uncooperative attitudes. 11. Systematic withholding of mail. 12. Preventing contact with anyone non-sympathetic to the method of treatment and regimen of the captive populace. 13. Building a group conviction among the prisoners that they have been abandoned by and totally isolated from their social order, especially family. 14. Undermining of all emotional support. 15. Preventing prisoners from writing regarding the conditions of their confinement. 16. Making available and permitting access to only those publications which are neutral to or supportive of the desired new attitude. Hang on, there's more to come on brainwashing of prisoners in society when we return right after. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour. I'm your host, George Wharton. Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest sponsored by the Gordon Law School. All of these Law Hour programs are archived for your listening convenience on the internet at georgewharton.org and at georgewharton.org. Well, those who already walk submissively will say that there's no cause for alarm, but submissiveness is not our heritage. The First Amendment was designed to allow rebellion to remain as our heritage, and the Constitution was designed to keep government off the backs of the people. Bill of Rights was added to keep the precincts of belief and expression of the press of political and social activities free from government surveillance. You know, I wished I'd have thought of that, but that quotation comes from our Supreme Court Justice William O. Douglas back in 1970. And now our princes and politicians bellow in the halls of Congress for more taxes, more spending, and more gun control, but you and I have not heard anything intelligent come out of a politician's mouth in more than 75 years. Now, that's why I contend that the only real reason, logic, or common sense left in America comes from the courts, not from the political process, the politicians, lawyers, or the bureaucrats. And old Mayor Rothschild summed it up with a flair when he said, "You give me the money power, and I care not who makes the laws." That's why I say, "You give me the judicial power, and I care not who makes the laws either." Because, you see, the real power in America comes from our courts, not the political process. If you'd like to tap into that power of the courts, why don't you call me at the law school? The number is 417-273-4967. And be sure to ask for my free general law CD package. Remember, that's a four-hour commentary on Gordon Law School. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative. Best of all, it's free of charge. And remember, courtroom strategy procedure is available on compact disc for adult home education. And if you're online, you can just go to the webpage, georgewharton.org, click on the email, and send me an email request for that free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgewharton.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we're looking at brainwashing. Brainwashing of society, the brainwashing of prisoners who have been captured. Who thought it up? Where is the practice? Who does such a thing? Would Americans do anything like brainwashing? That's something that the communists do. It's not something that Americans would do or have ever done or thought of. No, have they? Well, in going through the list of 23 things that have to be accomplished or set into motion in order to brainwash you, brainwash society, brainwash a prisoner are as follows. Remember, number 16 was making available and permitting access to only those publications which are neutral to the support of the desired new attitude. And number 17, placing individuals into new and ambiguous situations for which the standards are kept deliberately unclear, and then pressuring them to conform to what is desired in order to win favor and a reprieve from the pressure. Number 18 calls for placing the individual or individuals whose willpower has been severely weakened or eroded into a living situation with several others who are more advanced in their thought reform, whose job it is to further undermine the individual's emotional support. And number 19, using techniques of character invalidation, for instance, humiliation, revelment, shouting, to induce feelings of guilt, fear of suggestibility, coupled with sleeplessness, and exacting prison regimen and periodic interrogational interviews. Number 20, meeting with renewed hostility all insincere attempts to comply with cellmates' pressures. 21, repeatedly pointing out to the prisoner by cellmates of where he was in the past or is in the present, not even living up to his own standards or values. Number 22, rewarding of submission and subserviency to the attitudes encompassing the brainwashing objective with a lifting of pressures and an acceptance as a human being. And finally, number 23, providing social and emotional supports that reinforce these new attitudes following Dr. Sheen's address. Then, the director of the U.S. Bureau of Prisons, James W. Bennett, commented, quote, "One of the things that we must do is more research. It was indicated that we have a large organization with some 24,000 men in it now, and that we have a tremendous opportunity here to carry on some of the experimentation to which various panelists have alluded. And we can manipulate our environment and culture. We can perhaps undertake some of the techniques that Dr. Sheen has discussed, do things on our own, undertake a little experiment with what you can do with the Muslims or other groups, and there's a lot of research to do. Do it as individuals, do it as groups, and let us know the results." This comes from the pamphlet Breaking Men's Minds, Behavioral Control and Human Experimentation at the Federal Prison in Marion. Did you catch it? The federal prison, Marion, Illinois. The concept of brainwashing is not something that's new, and the techniques that are outlined here are the same techniques that we now see being exposed against the Muslim prisoners over in Iraq. These techniques are pioneered in the federal prison system here in the United States. What we have been observing going on down in Guantanamo Bay is a systematic brainwashing process that was pioneered in the federal prison system in the United States. And what we see going on in Iraq is a systematic brainwashing system or methodology that was pioneered here in the United States. It goes on not only in Iraq, not only in Guantanamo Bay, but it goes on in all of our federal and state and county jails, prisons, and federal institutions. Brainwashing, that is, pain compliance, brainwashing, commonly known as torture, are an institutionalized systematic methodology that is pioneered by the United States of America, not by the communists in North Korea or in the Soviet Union. Now I'm going to take you through brainwashing, a synthesis of the Russian textbook on psychopolitics. Brainwashing isn't something that goes on just in Russia or North Korea or China. It goes on in Turkey, Germany, France, Chile, Brazil, it goes on around the world. There isn't any government in the world that doesn't use these kinds of sociological pressures put on prisoners, whether they're prisoners in jail or prisoners in society. They are applied to your children in the public schools. They are applied to you in the workplace. The belief systems and values that you hold, that you learned in church, that you learned at home, such as, but not limited to, for instance, let's take your view on the social ramifications of sodomy. You probably were taught when you were a child that that was evil and wicked and bad, and terrible and awful and evil. But the children today are taken into the public schools, and they are systematically educated to accept this as what they call an alternative lifestyle. What we just saw of the sexual perversions going on in the Abu Ghraib prison in Baghdad is simply an extension of those young guards and their values that have been taught to them in the public schools and in the military to accept sodomy as an alternative lifestyle. They don't see anything wrong with what they did. And that's the objective of brainwashing. You see, you can take the law of God, which says these are the moral standards of society, and we Americans used to subscribe to those moral standards in our society concerning bestiality, sodomy, adultery, fornication. And we have now turned those around and made those all legal, normal, when in times past they were looked upon as being deviant. Now, we're in the process, and you'll see it now in the Catholic Church. You see, one-third of the Catholic clergy are pedophiles or sodomites. The ultimate goal will be to turn all of the Catholic clergy, and indeed all of the clergy of all of the church, into pedophiles and sodomites. The objective is to pervert the entire society to pedophilia and sodomy. And now, what you see here, the legalization of marriage between sodomites and lesbians, or lesbians and lesbians and sodomites and sodomites, is part and parcel of this brainwashing technology, this brainwashing technique. Now, here's the official definition of democracy. Let's take off here with the fundamentals of brainwashing. Here are four facsimile section reproductions taken from a 156-page book officially compiled and issued by the U.S. War Department on November the 30th, 1928. So brainwashing isn't something that began last month, 5 years ago, or during Clinton years. It began sometime before November the 30th, 1928, setting forth exact and truthful definitions of a democracy and of a republic, explaining the difference between both. And these definitions were published by the authority of the United States government and must be accepted as authentic in any court of proper jurisdiction. These precise and scholarly definitions of a democracy and a republic were carefully considered as a proper guide for U.S. soldiers and U.S. citizens by the Chief of Staff of the United States. United States Army. Such definitions take precedence over any definition that may be found in the present commercial dictionary, which have suffered periodical modifications to please the powers in office. Shortly after the bank holiday in the 1930s, hush-hush orders from the White House suddenly demanded that all copies of this book be withdrawn from the government printing office and the Army Post to be suppressed and destroyed without explanation. This was the beginning of the complete red control of the government from within, not from without. Now, a republic. Authority is derived through the election of the people of public officials best fitted to represent them. The attitude toward property is respect for laws and individual rights and a sensible economic procedure. The attitude toward law is the administration of justice in accord with fixed principles and established evidence with a strict regard to consequences. And a greater number of citizens and extent of territory may be brought within its compass. It avoids the dangerous extreme of either tyranny or mobocracy. Results in statesmanship, liberty, reason, justice, contentment, and progress. And is the standard form of government throughout the world. A republic is a form of government under a constitution which provides for the election of an executive, legislative body, who working together in a representative capacity have all of the power of appointment, all of the power of legislation, all power to raise revenues and to appropriate expenditures, and are required to create a judiciary to pass upon the justice and legality of their governmental acts and to recognize certain inherent individual rights. Take away any one or more of those four elements and you are drifting into autocracy. Add one or more to those four elements and you're drifting into democracy. So says Atwood. Superior to all others, autocracy declares the divine right of kings. Its authority cannot be questioned, and its powers are arbitrarily or unjustly administered. Democracy is the direct rule of the people and has been repeatedly tried without success. Our constitutional fathers, familiar with the strength and the weakness of both autocracy and democracy, with fixed principles, definitely in mind, defined a representative republican form of government as they made a very marked distinction between a republic and a democracy and said repeatedly and emphatically that they had founded a republic, not a democracy. Now, today, the word republic, except for the Republican Party, has been totally taken out of our schools, taken out of our politics. Every political statement that you hear from John Kerry or George Bush or any politician running for office constantly talks about our democracy, not about our republic. That's not by accident. That is a technique used, designed with specificity to take out of your consciousness and to brainwash you into believing that America is a democracy and not a republic. And indeed, it has been transformed from a republic into a democracy. They're not lying to you any longer. They did, but not any longer. Now, there's a reason why democracies fail. Now, a democracy cannot exist as a permanent form of government, and it can only exist until the voters discover that they can vote themselves largesse out of the public treasury. From that moment on, the majority always votes for the candidate promising the most benefits from the public treasury, with the result that democracy always collapses over a loose fiscal policy, always to be followed by a dictatorship or an autocracy. This is written by Professor Alexander Fraser Tyler, nearly two centuries ago, while our 13 original states were still colonies of Great Britain. Now, this is what brainwashing is all about. It is the methodology by which we are going to take 280 million Americans and we're going to change your views, change your values. We are going to convert you from a moral, righteous follower of God into a demented, homosexual pervert. Process is underway. It will occur with most people, but not all people. And by to see whether or not we can withstand brainwashing. All right, we're back. You're listening to The Law Hour, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour has been brought to you by the Gordon Law School as an educational service in the public interest. More information about The Law Hour, Gordon Law School, please go to my website. That's georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. All right, here's tonight's wise old saying. Thou shalt not steal. Honest work costs less. All right, we're talking about brainwashing, the techniques that have been employed when it started and so forth. Take a look here at the editorial note. Now, this particular publication is written by Kenneth Goff. Remember, it's entitled The Brainwashing, A Synthesis of the Russian Textbook on Psychopolitics. Now, Kenneth Goff, from May 2, 1936 to October the 10th, 1939, said, I was a dues-paying member of the Communist Party, operating under my own name, Kenneth Goff, and also the alias John Keats. In 1939, I voluntarily appeared before the Un-American Activities Committee in Washington, D.C., which was chaired at the time by Martin Dies. And my testimony can be found in Volume 9 of that year's Congressional Report. During the period that I was a member of the Communist Party, I attended their school, which was located at 113 East Wells Street, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and I operated under the name of Eugene Debs, labor school. Here, we were trained in all phases of warfare, both psychological and physical, for the destruction of the capitalistic society and Christian civilization. In one portion of our studies, we went thoroughly into the matter of psychopolitics. This was the art of capturing the minds of a nation through brainwashing and the fake mental health and subjecting the whole nation of people to the rule of the Kremlin by the capturing of their minds. We were taught that the degradation of the populace is less inhuman than their destruction by bombs. Because to an animal who lives only once, any life is sweeter than death. The end of a war is the control of a conquered people. If a people can be conquered in the absence of war, the end of the war will have been achieved without the destruction of war. During the past few years, I have noted with horror the increase of psycho-political warfare upon the American public. First, in the brainwashing of our servicemen in Korea, and then in the well-financed drive of mental health propaganda by left-wing pressure groups, wherein many of our states have passed bills which can well be used by the enemies of America to subject to torture and imprisonment those who preach the gospel of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ and who oppose the menace of communism. A clear example of this can be seen in the Lucille Miller case. In this warfare, the communists have definitely stated, quote, "You must recruit every agency of the nation marked for slaughter into a foaming hatred of religious healing." Another example of the warfare that is being waged can be seen in the attempt to establish a mental Siberia in Alaska, which was called for in the Alaska Mental Health Bill. A careful study of this bill will make you see at once that the land set aside under the allotment could not be for that small territory, and the bill within itself establishes such authority that it could be turned into a prison camp under the guise of mental health for everyone who raises their voice against communism and the hidden government operating in our nation. This book was used in underground schools and contains the address of Liberente Berea to the American students in the Lenin University prior to 1936. The text in the book, in general, is from the Communist Manual of Instructions of Psychopolitical Warfare and was used in America for the training of communist cadre. The only revision in this book is the summary, which was added by the communists after the atomic bomb came into being. In its contents, you can see the diabolical plot of the enemies of Christ and of America as they seek to conquer our nation by subjecting the minds of our people to their will by various sinister means. This manual of the Communist Party should be in the hands of every loyal American, and they may be alerted to the fact that it is not always by armies and guns that a nation is conquered. That was written by Kenneth Wellfield. Now, Berea was the secret KGB secret service or the secret police head. His name is Liberente Berea. And he said, "American students at the Lenin University, I welcome your attendance at these classes on psychopolitics. Psychopolitics is an important, if less known, division of geopolitics. It is less known because it must necessarily deal with highly educated personnel, the very top strata of mental healing. By psychopolitics, our chief goals are effectively carried forward to produce a maximum of chaos in the culture of our enemies in our midst. First, most important step. That is our most important step. Our fruits are grown in chaos, distrust, economic depression, and scientific turmoil. At least a weary populace can seek peace only in our offered communist state. At last, only communism can resolve the problems of the masses. A psychopolitician must work hard to produce the maximum chaos in the fields of mental healing. He must recruit and use all of the agencies and facilities of mental healing, and he must labor to increase the personnel and the facilities of mental healing until, at last, the entire field of mental science is entirely dominated by communist principles and desires. To achieve these goals, the psychopolitician must crush every homegrown variety of mental healing in America. Actual teachings of James Eddy and Pentecostal Bible faith healers amongst your misguided people must be swept aside. They must be discredited, defamed, arrested, stamped out, stamped upon, even by their own government, until there is no credit in them and only communist-oriented healing remains. You must work until every teacher of psychology, unknowingly or knowingly, teaches only communist doctrine under the guise of psychology and psychiatry. You must labor until every doctor and psychiatrist is either a psychopolitician or an unwitting assistant to our aims. You must labor until we have dominion over the minds and bodies of every important person in your nation. You must achieve such disrepute for the state of insanity and such authority over its pronouncement that not one statesman so labeled could again be given credence or credibility by his own people. You must work until suicide arising from mental imbalance is common and calls forth no general investigation or remark. With the institutions for the insane you have in your country, prison, which can hold a million persons and can hold them without civil rights or any hope of freedom, and upon these people can be practiced shock and surgery so that never again will they draw a sane breath. You must make these treatments common and accepted, and you must sweep aside any treatment or any group of persons seeking to treat by any effective means. You must dominate as respected men the fields of psychiatry and psychology. You must dominate the hospitals and the universities. You must carry forward the myth that only a European doctor is competent in the field of insanity and thus excuse amongst you the high incidence of foreign birth and training. If and when we seize Vienna, you shall have then a common ground of meeting and can come and take your instructions as worshippers of Freud among the other psychiatrists. Psychopolitics is a solemn charge. With it, you can erase your enemies. You can erase your enemies like insects. You can cripple the efficiency of leaders by striking insanity into their families through the use of drugs. You can wipe them away with testimony as to their insanity. By our technologies, you can even bring about insanity itself when they seem too resistant. You can change their loyalties by psychopolitics. Given a short time with a psychopolitician, you can alter forever the loyalty of a soldier in our hands or a statesman or a leader in his own country, or you can even destroy his mind. However you labor, under certain dangers, it may happen that remedies for your treatments may be discovered. It may occur that a public hue and cry may arise against mental healing. It may thus occur that all mental healing might be placed in the hands of ministers and be taken out of the hands of our psychologists and psychiatrists. But the capitalistic thirst for control, capitalistic inhumanity, and a general public terror of insanity can be brought to guard against these. But should they occur, should independent researchers actually discover means to undo psychopolitical procedures, you must not rest, and you must not eat or sleep. You must not stint one tiniest bit of available money to campaign against it, discredit it, strike it down, and render it void. For by an effective means, all of our actions and researches could be undone. In a capitalistic state, you are aided on all sides by the corruption of the philosophy of man and the times, and you will discover that everything will aid you in your campaign to seize control and to use all mental healing to spread our doctrine and rid us of our enemies within their own borders. Use the courts, use the judges, use the constitution of the country that you're operating within, use its medical societies and its laws to further our ends. Do not stint in your labor in this direction. And when you have succeeded, you will discover that you can now affect your own legislation at will, and you can by careful organization of health and healing society, by constant campaign about the terrors of society, by pretense as to your effectiveness. Make your capitalist himself, by his own appropriations, finance a large portion of the quiet communist conquest of their nation. By psychopolitics, create chaos. Leave the nation leaderless. Kill our enemies. And bring to earth, through communism, the greatest peace man has ever known. Thank you. Now, that's an address by the head of the KGB. Did you remember what our friend Mikhail Gorbachev said? He said, "Gentlemen, comrades, don't be concerned about all you hear about glasnost and perestroika and democracy in the coming years. They are primarily for outward consumption. There will be no significant internal changes in the Soviet Union other than for cosmetic purposes. Our purpose is to disarm the Americans and let them fall. Wake up, boys and girls. We'll be back in 3 minutes. We'll be with more on Greenwashing. We return. And on.